Church Uncharted is a podcast about following Jesus and making new followers of Jesus in the uncharted waters of today. Your host, Matt Schubert, is a mission facilitator and church planter in the Rockingham Mandurah region of Western Australia. He knows that the call to follow Jesus can look different in an ever-changing culture, and when it comes to evangelism, there's no perfect formula. So he'll be joined by guests who'll help us, the church, navigate these exciting unknowns.
If you can get people talking about important things long enough in a safe environment, non-judgmental, where you can make mistakes and not be laughed at, I reckon we'll look back in 10 years' time and we'll say, gee, the culture's changed. How'd that happen? I don't know.
It's our hope that as we listen into the following conversation, we'll be encouraged by the everyday power of the gospel, be given a deeper love for God's church, and be stirred to see the way the Spirit is at work in the lives of those around us. This is Season 2.
Hi there, everybody, and welcome back to this next episode of the Church Uncharted podcast. You are in for a treat today as I am joined by Pastor Adrian Kitson. I say that you're in for a treat because Pastor Adrian has one of the best radio voices I have ever heard. So why don't you introduce yourself, Adrian? Thanks for coming on to the podcast.
Thank you very much.
Oh no, someone else said that. No, thanks, Matt. Really good to join you. I've been listening in a bit and really enjoying it. Yeah, good to be here.
Great. So why don't you just introduce yourself a little bit to our listeners, share a little bit of your story and where you're currently situated. Share a little bit about yourself, Adrian.
Yeah, love to, mate. The Western Australians will love this. I actually grew up in WA. Yes, I did. What a place. Brilliant. Love the place. So up and down the coast between Busselton and Geraldton and the city, they were my three sort of spaces that I grew up in.
Well, what a blessed upbringing you had.
Yeah, well, a bit of country, bit of city, mostly country, I suppose, in a way. But enjoyed that. Love the beach, love the coast, love the WA culture, all that stuff anyway. Both my wife and I, actually, my wife Leanne, we both grew up in WA. So we know the place well and love it. Love it a lot. I've got two older sisters, so family of five, at least for the start of my journey. Didn't last too long, but I'll tell you about that. No church, real meaning, not a church sort of connected family at all for most of my growing up years. Although, God bless her cotton socks, Mum did somehow find the way to get us to Catholic schools when we could. We moved a fair bit, see, so yes, the Catholic school, priests, nuns, God, church, all of that stuff was kind of there, but it didn't mean anything to me personally for quite a long time. Pretty disrupted growing up and sometimes traumatic. So some very dodgy relationships between adults and some traumatic moments, et cetera, et cetera. Lots of moving up and down the coast, and that was mainly because of marriage and remarriage and divorce. Multiple times from the parents, or one parent in particular, my mum. Just moving a lot and unsettled. And I went to 8 schools in 12 years, I think, in WA. So, Wow. Yeah, pretty tricky. So that was all very interesting. The Lutheran connection or the church connection, or a real beginning to a church connection and a faith connection was through my sister, one of my sisters. She married a Lutheran farmer. That's the Lutheran church connection. And one day when I was in year 9 or the end of year 8 or something, she said, "You're going to youth camp." And I said, "No, I'm not going to youth camp." And she said, "You're going to youth camp," because she's 5 years older than me, so she could boss me around.
And did you go to youth camp?
I did. And I was scared to death, absolutely scared to death. You know what it's like to be in a room when no one talks to you, that kind of fear.
Yes.
And blow me down if I was not so impressed. I was absolutely, and it was so outside my life and my comfort zone and my experience. So long-haired, hippie-looking, you know, young adults playing Green Book songs, the old 1970s folk songs, Kumbaya. And 50 kids singing along with all their heart, you know. Never seen that before. Mm. Never sung in a communal group ever. And with authenticity and real faith and real presence was great.
Is that where your passion for music kind of kicked off, Adrian, or has that been part of your family?
A little bit part of the family. Older sister in a little band in the country town, and mum in a little band in a country town. So a bit of music going on there. Mm. But definitely in terms of singing, songwriting, community music, leading, definitely. Definitely the seeds were planted. Yep. Mm. So and just the inclusivity.
So you went to youth camp?
Yep. Really good. The best bit about it was after that, the same people were at the local church. Mm. Otherwise, I reckon I just would have faded away and nothing would have happened. But I somehow they got me to their local church, and that's where it all started to happen.
Yeah. Cool.
So the camp and the local church, really critical. Looking back anyway. Loved being a part of the youth group. Had no idea what to do after school. Okay, I'll study youth work. So I did a 3-year youth work degree at what was then called WACI, which is now called Edith Cowan University.
Really?
Met some magnificent people there. They were just wonderful people, and they're lifelong friends, mentors. So that's great. I worked for the state church, like the district or WA district. So a statewide youth worker role when I left uni, and that lasted about 18 months until the money ran out. Okay, no more funding. So let's go 3,000 kilometres away for a job that we saw in the paper, a youth work job in a church in Adelaide. Okay. So Leon and I packed up the bus and off we went, married 18 months. We've only just been married, and off we went. Big adventure, wonderful experience, 6 years of youth work. Towards the middle of that, or maybe towards the end of it, the nagging, gee, Adrian, you ever thought about being a pastor?
No.
Are you sure? I mean, you know, you might make a good pastor.
No, I don't want to be. No.
Anyway, eventually I said, well, I won't be a pastor, but I'll study theology. Therefore.
That's where it starts, hey?
And it was a great experience. I loved it. Absolutely loved theology study. I just loved it, every minute of it. And all the practical stuff. And so, yep, there we go. Ordained in 1999, the millennium year. And of all places, sent off to Auckland, which is not where we thought and not where we wanted to go. And it was really hard at the start. Had 3 kids by then, and that was really hard going. But magnificent people over there won us over, and it was okay. It was actually delightful.
Oh, great.
Just beautiful. And then back finally to home to do church planting, of all things.
Over here in the west.
In dear old Bunno in Bunbury, just south of Bunbury in Dayella. First ever attempt, or maybe second, probably the first attempt by the church to try something different. Let's create a new school. And at the same time we're doing that, let's plant a church by using the school. Mm. So we had a go. So that was 8 years, and absolutely exhilarating. Adult baptisms, whole families being baptized, kinds of amazing connections in the community, et cetera, et cetera. But extremely exhausting. Mm. So had a bit of a meltdown there for a while, but recovered. But you get to the end of that. That was 8 years. That was very, very solid work. And then a big, old, large heritage, 150-year-old Lutheran as can Lutheran call came, and we went. So now we're in the beautiful Barossa Valley in a very large, well, in Lutheran terms or Australian church terms, large-ish, with a huge story. A lot of immigrant roots and a lot of reach throughout the whole country because of those.
Those who aren't part of the Lutheran circle, we might just fill you in there and go that really the Barossa Valley, that's the heartland, that's the real kind of powerhouse district of the Lutheran Church of Australia. So when Adrian says that he's pastoring in that kind of traditional heritage kind of context, it really is.
Mm. Well, I tell you, mate, it's so unique, and there's nothing like it in the rest of the country, really, in our little church terms. 32% of the people in our postcode put Lutheran on the census before last.
That's amazing. So
that's a lot of people.
In our suburb where we live over in the West, you wouldn't even know what a Lutheran was. Yeah.
That's right. One of those weird cults, mate.
Yeah, one of those ones that pop up from time to time.
Yeah. So I think that's pretty much it.
So what's that been like, Adrian? You've both done church planting in a very new growth area in Bunbury, Western Australia, part of a growing school, really starting a church from the ground up, and now you're in a congregation with a 150-year history like that. That's quite unique. What's that been like? What thoughts pop into your mind initially?
I think they both have a legitimate place.
Mm.
So they both count.
Yeah,
and that's okay. They really demand different things. Well, some similar things and some different things. So church planting, I found, was extremely high energy. And there's a lot of reasons for that. Your systems aren't in place. So you've got to make everything happen. You know, you've got to start everything and you've got to organize it all and you've got to initiate stuff. But also, looking back, it's the extensive relationships with non-church people that you barge into and you stay in and you hang in there with them. Most of the relationships I had in Dayella were non-Christians. And that it's beautiful. That's why, of course, I wanted to be there, but it's exhausting because there's enormous difference in values and no shared language and all of that stuff. So it's really hard work to just navigate that and to stay in it and to never give off the sense of any judgment and to just be disciplined at the same time as open and normal and authentic and all that stuff. So that was really exhausting, but exhilarating at the same time. Here, all my relationships, bar three, are with church people.
Yep.
It's just a whole different kettle of fish. And all kinds of different church people because it's a big church. So there's all kinds of people like there are in a suburb in any place you want to mention in Australia. So they both have their place. They demand different sorts of conversations and awareness, I think. The challenge here is to constantly push outside of the church space when it's really hard to do so. You actually intentionally have to.
How do you do that when
try hard?
How do you do that when 30% of your town's population identifies as one of you?
That's right, and that's a challenge, mate. And the problem I find here, it's even a more difficult context for mission because of that. Everybody's got about 12 layers of resistance to you because they think they've got it and they've left it, and they haven't been back for 20 years or 10 years or 5 years. And they think it's still the same as it was then. And so you're constantly put in a box. You're always in a box. And you sort of have to become a little bit radical or a bit use different language and surprise people for them to open the box up and let you out. So now we can have a real conversation. So, yeah, it's a different dynamic.
Otherwise, you'll just be perceived as the exact same encounter that they had 20 years ago that, all right, they didn't bite then why would they bite now?
Exactly right. It's a strong resistance too. There's a lot of reasons why they're not coming back.
Sure.
And to be truthful, from what they tell me, and it might only just be their perspective, I wouldn't come back either. They're pretty stern days.
Yeah. And not only that, but you're also leading your congregation, so it's not just you kind of engaging with those kind of people, but you're also trying to lead your congregation to be equipped in those kinds of conversations, which for the best evangelists, you know, that's a tough gig.
It is.
And yet you're trying to lead your congregation in that culture change as well.
Yeah, definitely, mate. I don't know. I still don't really know why, as I understand it from the National Church Life Survey and other people, Lutherans, where I live, we're the worst we're the least confident in sharing our faith. We just are not good at it at multiple levels. And in this culture, what I hear most often from particularly people who are maybe over 60 or so, they the reason they mainly give for no confidence in this is because they think they might get something wrong. And that really bothers me, because you really can't. You just share your experience and that's legitimate. And but they have this fear of getting something wrong. And I didn't live here and I don't come from this church culture. So I don't know where that comes from, but it feels like only the pastor really knew what to say.
Yeah.
And what to do. And, you know, I couldn't possibly do that, you know, that kind of thing. That's a worry.
So we've mentioned a couple times this phrase church culture. And, you know, I think when we say that, a number of kind of images or pictures pop into our mind. For you, what is the culture of a congregation, and why is it important that we're aware of the church culture that we're in?
I think I think of that iceberg picture. You know, when you get an iceberg and you get a pointy top on the thing and it looks really huge, but actually it's 14 times the size and it's all below the water. Your culture is what drives the top on the top bit, and it's murky and it's hard to see. And you actually have to get out of the boat and jump in the water to go and see it with a big torch. You know, it's, you got to intentionally actually look for it in the symbols and the language, the songs that are sung, the words that are spoken, the way people organize themselves, the stuff they value. You can tell they value it because of how they treat it.
Right.
You know, all those things, that, you know, that kind of thing. And if you don't identify that murky stuff below that's driving the top, then I don't think you'll ever really get to the heart of the matter and of the people to move somewhere. You're just on surface and you're just a tourist. You're just having a look around for a while until you go somewhere else.
You're saying that someone might walk into a new church, they're driving the Titanic and they see the top of the iceberg and they're like, oh, yeah, no biggie, I can deal with that. And then it's this massive, big, lower bit of the iceberg that takes you by surprise, sends you sinking down and into a perilous deck.
Sort of. At least the band's playing.
That's a great picture of what the culture of a church. So it's important for us, wherever our local congregation is, to be aware of what's actually beneath the surface that might inform the decisions that are being made, some of the emotional reactions, even the style of music. It's important that we're aware of that, right?
Yeah, because if you don't get down below that, and I don't know if this is totally true, but it feels like, can you actually speak the gospel with any power and clarity? Because you're not getting to the heart of it. And you can tell when you're getting close to what's really important, because it goes real quiet. You know, and then the gospel's got air, it's got space, it's got a place to be and a place to move. We've stopped playing games now, and we've identified some weaknesses or some strengths. I wonder what God's got to say. You know, then we're there. so really important.
So if we're blind to some of that stuff that's underneath, not only can it get in the way of us sharing the gospel with those around us, but it can also kind of block our own reception of what God's up to in that community, because we all kind of can tend to have obstacles in the way which often our church experience, culture can be those kind of blockages. Yeah.
I think you're right. And I don't know, whenever I think of culture and stuff, I think of idols and, you know, all that language that is good to know about and think about. I always think of Augustine and his famous kind of take on the thing about, it's not that we human beings don't love, we do love. The problem is that our loves are a bit out of whack. They're disordered. They're wrong prioritized. So we love things that aren't really worth that much, a lot. And we love things that are worth everything, not much. So then that relates to the Christian faith about love the Lord your God with all your heart and all your mind and all your soul and all your strength. There's really only one commandment, and that's it, and all the rest of how you break it. So it's always a matter of trust, the Christian life. And as a church in mission, it's always about trust, and it's always about who we're trusting, what we're trusting. Is it the business model? Is it the music? Is it the new paint job? Is it a better projector? is it, you know, all these programmatic things that we seem to go, and we need those things. I love projectors. It's good. But if that's all we've got, we're not the gospel. Mm-hmm. We're just a program or a goods and services transaction. Yeah. You know, come to our place, get some stuff and go home. Great. You know, so
got to get to the culture.
We know that a church having a culture isn't a bad thing in and of itself, in the same way that a church having a tradition isn't a bad thing in and of itself. I'm sure where you're stationed at the moment, you benefit from a rich tradition in that place. So how do we work out when a culture of a congregation, whether we're the pastor, whether we're one of the lay leaders, whether we're a greeter, whatever our station is in our local congregation, how do we assess whether we should go with the flow of that church culture or if we should try and push back against it, try and shape it? What are your thoughts on that, Adrian?
Yeah. I mean, it's a hard thing, man, isn't it? It's very tricky to know the difference because, you know, people will say, we're a really friendly church. You know, we just know we are. It's great. And then you do the National Church Life Survey and it comes back that we are the least friendly church in the country, but we think we're friendly. You know, what's going on there? So it's this amazing human ability we've got to misread stuff and don't know ourselves well and, you know, all that stuff. But having said all that, in the end, the gospel is the thing that transforms people and culture. So somehow it's always got to be about where's the good news of Jesus, forgiveness and peace and, you know, all that stuff. Where's that? Stick with that. That'll change the culture, not me. But then there's other decisions after that. Should we do this? Should we do that? How do we know? And that's a collaborative effort, I think. I've got to work with other people. I've got to consult. I've got to ask not just the church people. I've got to ask God's word and the church people. And I actually have to ask the non-church people because the Holy Spirit's already at work in them. They don't know it. We can't see it, but he is. That's what he says. So there's three voices I have to consult with to make decisions about what to leave, what to go for, what to change. It includes the very people we're reaching. We must listen to them.
It requires a posture of humility, doesn't it? Because a number of times I thought, oh, this needs to change about our church in order for the gospel to reach us and those around. But actually, I was just putting it through a filter of how I would see, how I would like to see the gospel at work and the kind of vessels that we set up for that. When actually, you know what? My way isn't necessarily the only way that God can work. And so really, I wish that I could just come in as the expert and go, all right, we need to change all of this. But really, it needs to be a co-journeying experience, doesn't it? So that we try and push past our own biases and our own ideas to really go, well, what's God speaking to this community about?
I think you're right, mate. But I know you're right. And I'm at my experience, and I personally, I'm a collaborative kind of leader, so I do that. I want to do that naturally, and usually you'll find a couple at least who'll come with you and actually ask the questions at least. They mightn't want to do what you want to do, but you'll have fun asking the real questions and talking it through and thinking it through. On the other hand, a mate of mine always challenges me here, and he says, but if you look in the Bible, God gives his vision to a person usually, and then that person has the task of envisioning the community. And I think, no, that can't be true. It's always a team effort. You know, I'm a team man. He says, no, it's not. You look in the scriptures. And I say, well, who? And he says, oh, try Moses. Okay. Try Abraham. Yeah. Okay. Try Paul. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And you and I, we come from a certain kind of church tradition that has a certain perspective on church governance and leaders. And you know, there could be listeners there that their church is set up in a different way. So maybe it is more one guy calling the shots, or maybe it is a plurality of elders. And really, and maybe that's an area where we can really just learn from one another and go, oh, you know, how's that play out there? How does that work? How do you discern God's voice in your community? That kind of thing.
Yeah. But even if a vision of a particular community and what the future may be or what we need to do comes to a person, a leader, that doesn't really make a difference. No. It's about being collaborative. Because even Moses had to pick 70 elders because Jethro, his father-in-law, said, "You're an idiot. You have to actually share."
He was getting too tired.
Yeah, this. You have to. It's going to kill you. So I think we're always collaborative in the end. You have to be a good, any leader, anybody, any elder, any pastor, any whatever you are, you've got to work with people and you need to draw them in and actually genuinely ask them, what do you think? What are you hearing? What are you hearing from God? It might be what we need to hear today. can we listen to him through you, please? Like, you got to. I can't see another way of sustaining a good local community mission. You know, it's a way to go.
What's it been like trying to lead an established congregation to be more missional in their day-to-day, and in particular, has your church at the time for recording you're not meeting together on Sunday mornings because of the COVID restrictions. What effect has all that had, and kind of what doors has God opened at this time?
I think the COVID thing is serving the first question in you know, all kinds of ways. I think my experience so far is that somehow you've got to treat your community as the leadership group, like a, I don't know, like a pot of peas on a stove. You got to keep the temperature up, and you just got to keep adjusting the temperature over a very long time. And it's just by asking questions, by leading by example, by offering some practical helps in preaching and teaching, and just conversation about sharing your faith and how you could do it, and what happened when you did, and gee, isn't it good to do that? And gee, it's good to be a welcoming church, isn't it? Did you talk to anybody new today? That'd be great. Put some programmatic things in place, stuff like, I don't know, here we've got this slide on the PowerPoint screen that comes up and says, give the first five. So the idea is that for the first 5 minutes of morning tea conversation, you talk to someone you don't know or that you don't know well or you haven't seen for ages. And then you make jokes about it. You know, even if the person's been here 30 years and you don't know them, just take the risk and go and say, who are you? You know, because it's a big church and you won't know everybody. So program stuff, personal stuff, preaching, teaching, leadership, publication stuff, like, you know, the vision from the governance council for the next 3 years is this. This is what we think God's calling. You know, all that, everything, multiple level. And I think somehow, if you can get people talking about important things long enough in a safe environment, non-judgmental, where you can make mistakes and not be laughed at, and you can just do that a lot, I reckon we'll look back in 10 years' time and we'll say, gee, the culture's changed. How'd that happen? I don't know. And because you've just stuck at it and you've done it all in with the word at the center and a lot of love, I think. That's pretty much what it's all about. COVID thing is helping us here. It's forcing the folks here to break that mindset that church is a big building that I go to and we do that in an hour, then we go home. That's church. It's breaking it. And the longer it goes, the better it is, because it'll break it more. So now we're saying the church has left the building. The church is always been never a building. It's always been the people of God. And now we can see it. And I don't know, but I hope that gives them confidence to be the church without the building, even when we're back in the building. I hope that's what it's doing. I don't know if it is. And it's up to us now as a leadership group and staff and stuff to ask those questions and get that conversation going on and listen to people's responses. Yeah, so we kind of feel hopeful and sort of optimistic, and we don't mind that it's, don't like the COVID virus, mind you, but we don't mind that we can't worship for a long time in our normal way, because I think that's a good thing somehow.
Well, what I really like about what we just described was the perseverance required of it, and just the persistent changes, the persistent language that we use. And my experience is that really any church person can influence culture by implementing those kinds of things, by just being persistently speaking to the new person, persistently encouraging others to speak to the new person. And, you know, perhaps this COVID milestone in that journey is just one of many things that the church has lined up, that God has lined up, so that both your congregation, my congregation, the congregation of all those who are listening, that all these things can accumulate and push us to just be a more missional people, a more loving people, a people who embrace the gospel rather than putting obstacles in the way. I think that's probably a good spot to leave it, Adrian. Thank you so much for the conversation today. You're serving in a context and you have a story which just brings so much encouragement, so much insight to myself and those listening. So thanks for coming on the Church Uncharted podcast.
My pleasure, mate, and all the best to you and your listeners.
Thanks for listening to Church Uncharted. If you have any thoughts or questions from the episode today, we invite you to reach out to Matt or Adrian. Their links can be found in the description of this episode. If you would like to hear more of Adrian's thoughts at this time, you can search for his podcast. It's called Scenic Valley on Spotify. And we're a small podcast hoping to spark a big conversation. So we'd love for you to share this episode with your church family or on your social media account. That way we can all be encouraged by the everyday power of the gospel, be given a deeper love for God's church, and be stirred to see the way the Spirit is at work in the lives of those around us.